This is NPR Illinois. I'm Rachel Otwell.
Indictus is a book that I have been trying to write for many, many years. And it is a book that is full of trigger warnings. It is a book on assault, and it's something that I've been attempting to write for many, many years. And so Indictus it takes many forms. One of the forms it takes is imagining a different world, perhaps, that has no men in it. And it's not no men, but it's the men who have done harm. And so it takes on this sort of sci-fi quality in this grand sweep of what it meant to write a world without men. I was writing into the Bible. So I grew up Jewish, and I read a whole lot in the Old Testament that is not very nice to women. We don't get served very well.
And so I'm curious to know then the kind of evolution here, the journey that you've been on since writing Swan Feast, which was your debut book, is that
mm-hmm.
correct? And from what I was able to parse out, that seemed like a very personal narrative where a
mm-hmm.
lot of that was coming from. So, and this seems to almost like kind of take that and put it into the context of patriarchy and issues women deal with more globally versus personally for you. Is that, am I onto something there?
Yeah, you definitely are. I would say it is a book that I attempted to conceive of based on the artifice of the Venus of Willendorf. The Venus of Willendorf is this 36,000 statuette of a woman. And I was using this figurine in an attempt to write about the narrative of body image and eating disorders that a lot of women and men face. But I wasn't really writing on a global scale about that. I was writing about my own personal experience of eating disorders specifically. But I was also married to this idea of the figurine as a voice that kept telling me I could eat. You know, it was giving me this permission. So it did follow in a very personal track, but it was also leaning me towards the surreal. It was leaning me towards this idea that I could follow a narrative arc and even enter into this womanly epic. And so I've been really fascinated by the idea of not just storylines told by women about the patriarchy, but also the way that women can dominate epics and take control of them.
And so one thing that's really fascinating about contemporary poetry is just the internet seemed to change things so quickly. You even started the Atlas Review, and there are numerous such sites. There's a lot of collaboration going on, and also to me it feels like this sort of do-it-yourself ethic where people are really curating poetry themselves, writing it obviously, but then also this kind of collaboration and this kind of boosting each other up. Is that something that's important to you?
Oh my God, it is so important. There's a lot to be said about the internet's influence on poetry. You know, whether you follow that to its peak or its nadir in terms of like the effect it has on quality, there's something about the way that the internet has given us community, a sense of that. And, you know, I think that as we grow as artists within this community incubator, you know, the internet is a bit of a community incubator. As we grow with that, we end up feeling more accountable for each other. And the most gratifying thing that happens is poet boosting poets. Like I'm such a huge fan of review writing. Like I love writing reviews for books that I love. And I love when poets write reviews for poets. I love that. And I love the ways in which we can support each other without it really like turning into this ugly nepotism. There's a way that the internet makes it so that it's not for any power play or leverage. You're simply responding to a culture of support, and that's really great. And also one other thing, like this idea of this like DIY poetry community, you know, anyone can start a journal. That's true. And I think a lot of folks that grew up in the 90s and the early aughts, you know, there was also this zine culture evolved in the online journal, or even, I mean, there are still poetry zines, but I think a lot of zine kids ended up growing up learning InDesign, learning how, you know, JavaScript works, learning how to do all the things that can translate to wider sweeps of audiences. So there's a lot that the internet has done that is good, more, I'd say, now than any time. You can just go into like a click hole, you know, in terms of like just reading poet after poet after poet. And it's all good. It's all good and quality work. And I don't think there's ever been a time where you had this much access to this many experimental, wild minds. So it's, yeah, I'm very much pro-internet for that.
You're listening to Illinois Edition. I'm Rachel Otwell, joined now by Natalie Eilbert. She's a poet who will be joining us at the WUIS Suggs Studio here on the UIS campus. That's for the first Shelter Belt reading series of the semester. It's tomorrow night, Thursday at 7 p.m. So one thing I really like about your poetry that I've read is sometimes contemporary poetry for me can be so cryptic that it takes multiple reads to even attempt to get some meaning out of it, and then I'm left feeling like, you know, okay, maybe this was just supposed to be subjective and I can take away whatever I want, but I'm not sure what I just said. But with you, it was like I could hear the words being said. Maybe I just found your topics more relatable and that was why, but it was like I was almost reading something that was meant to be a script, meant to be read out loud. Is the meter and the way you use grammar, do you use it in that way maybe to be a little bit more digestible? I mean, is that a naughty word in the poetry?
No, it's not naughty at all. I mean, I thank you for saying that because, like, you know, I come from a very, I was raised by very careful, insane poets, you know. I mean not my family. I mean, like, my like academic raising, like my parents or grandparents in poetry, in American poetry, were Walt Whitman and Emily Dickinson, who are, I think, the grandparents of many, many folks, you know, in the poetry community. And they're both absolutely out of their minds, but very carefully at first. And so I went from that, and I, you know, my biggest influence when I was a teen into my 20s, it's probably not so surprising, but it was Sylvia Plath. And Sylvia Plath is the queen of syntax. You could do Mad Libs with her work. In fact, if you're a professor of creative writing, do some Sylvia Plath Mad Libs in your class. It will go over well. People will start to understand syntax in a very different way because she's so queen. But she's also a mad woman, you know, and she was able to give you these topics that were heartbreaking and complicated, and she did not try to revise them so that she looked good when she said them. When I write, the first thing I do after I write a first draft is record myself reading it. And then as I'm reading it or aloud, I'm thinking. And then when I'm listening to myself afterward, I'm writing down things that don't work. I'm writing down the hesitations. I'm writing down, you know, my reluctance to pronounce something just so that I can perform it better on the page the next draft. So eventually, it ends up being very much a poem that was revised both on the page and in a spoken context. And usually that does the trick, but then again, I'm never satisfied with it. But that's another story altogether.